In the town of Fontana, the bully boys who made up Tilden Franklin's army were having a fine old time exercising their muscle on the citizens. The Silver Dollar Kid and the punk who called himself Sundance were strutting up and down the boardwalk, shooting at signs and anything else they took a mind to fire at. Big Mama lay on the floor of her pleasure palace, her head split wide open from a rifle butt. A few of the TF riders were busying themselves with her stable of red light girls, free of charge. Billy lay in the loft of the stable, watching it all, his .22 rifle at the ready in case any of the TF riders tried to hurt him. Louis Longmont sat in his gaming tent, riffling a deck of cards. His Colts were belted around his lean waist. A rifle and a double-barreled shotgun lay on a table. Mike sat across the room, armed with two pistols and a rifle. Louis was not worried about any TF riders attempting to storm his place. They knew better. Colton and Mona Spaulding and Haywood and Dana Arden sat silently in the newspaper office. All had made up their minds they were leaving Fontana at the first chance. But now, they listened to the sporadic screams coming from the direction of Ed Jackson's general store. Meanwhile, Smoke Jensen paced the street in front of the large general store of Big Rock.
How in the hell did they manage to tree the town?
I reckon the townspeople, them that's left, was in shock over the sheriff and his deputies being gunned down the way they was. And Tilden's bunch just overpowered them that stood to fight.
How many men? I'd say over 100. But Beaconfield sent word in about 2 hours ago that Tilden left a good-sized bunch at the ranch. I'd say he's got a good 125 to 150 men under his command.
You got any ideas, Smoke?
Where's Monty, Luke?
At the doc's clinic. He's hanging on, so I was told.
Judge Proctor?
Out of town. Denver, I think.
It would be foolish for us to try to retake the town. If we leave here, Tilden would probably send his men from the ranch to take this place. Burn it, probably. And any ranch or farm up here he could find.
Damn. I hate to just sit here and do nothing. But I don't know what else we can do.
I hope Billy's all right. I should have got that kid out of there before this.
In Lewis's gaming tent, the gambler looked up at his bouncer.
Mike, go get our horses and bring them around to the back. And if you find that boy Billy, bring him along. I'm thinking when those rowdies get enough booze in them, they'll rush us. I'd like to get that boy out of this place.
Mike stood and was gone into the night. Lewis looked at the roulette wheels, the faro cue boxes, the card presses, the keno gooses, and all the other paraphernalia of gambling.
I shall not be needing any of it. When I again gamble, it will be in the company of ladies and gentlemen, with champagne and manners and breeding.
Mike returned in less than 15 minutes, with saddled horses and Billy in tow.
Billy, are you okay?
Yeah, some TF rowdy tried to give us a hard time. Your bodyguard broke his neck.
Mike's a good one, he is. Come on, we're going to Big Rock. Let's go, Andre.
Lewis, his bodyguard Mike, his cook Andre, and Billy mounted up, the barest of supplies on their horses. They cleared the town and then rode hard for the town of Big Rock.
So what's Fontana like, Lewis?
Grim. Heard some woman screaming on our way out, coming from Ed's place. These men are real scum.
Well, we'll see if we can fix that.
I don't think Fontana's worth fixing, Smoke. Without the gold, there's no reason for it to even exist. I'm packed up and moving on.
Listen, can't we ride for the army? That marshal seemed like he would really be able to help.
Nearest army post is 4 days away, Hunt, and the next stage isn't due for 24 hours, if then. Think you boys could handle those gun hawks left at the TF ranch, Buttermilk?
From his saddle, the old gunslinger grinned his reply. It wasn't much of a grin, seeing as how he had no teeth, but he grinned all the same.
All right, leave Dad Weaver and three others at the Sugarloaf. One in the barn with a rifle and lots of shells. Let me have Crooked John and Bull, and then the rest of you take off to the TF. Pin them down and wear them down with rifle fire. Then cut them down when they get enough and try to pull out. Give them hell, boys.
Sounds good. Let's ride, boys!
Those old boys will lay up on the ridges around the TF spread and put so much lead in that house, those gunhawks will be crying to get out.
Those old men will allow their adversaries to surrender, won't they?
You just have to be joking.
Let's go, boys.
Crooked John and Bull rode with Lewis, Smoke, and Johnny North. Pearly stayed behind with Luke and Charlie. The men rode slowly, sparing their horses and making plans as they rode.
I think we should let them get good and drunk. That'll make our work easier.
Good idea. And we need to get Monty out of there. We can hitch up the horses, put some hay in the back to keep Monty comfortable, and point the pilgrims on the way to Big Rock.
All right. While you're doing that, I'll ease in and see about Ed and his wife. Johnny, let's make it a mite easier for us. Bull, you and Crooked John create a diversion at this end of town. You can leave your horses in that dry run behind the stable. Lewis, how about you?
I'll be doing some headhunting on my own.
It was full dark when they pulled up, the lights of Fontana below them.
I wonder where Tilden is. If I could get lead in him, this would be over.
Well protected, wherever he is. But what puzzles me is this. Why is he letting his men do this?
He's gone over the edge. He's a crazy man, drunk with power. He's made no telling how many thousands of dollars on gold shares with the miners, and doesn't care how much of it he spends. And he hates me.
None of the men needed to add that Tilden Franklin also wanted Sally Jensen.
Let's go, boys, and good luck.
The men separated, Smoke turning his horse's head toward the right, Johnny moving out to the left. Bull and Crooked John headed straight in toward the lights of Fontana, and Lewis Longmont moved out alone into the night. Each man stashed his horse in the safest place he could find and slipped into the town to perform his assigned job. Smoke slipped to the rear of Jackson's general store and eased up onto the loading dock. His spurs were left hanging on his saddle horn, and he made no noise as he pushed open the back door and entered the storeroom area of the building. Smoke wondered what kind of diversion the gunslingers had set. He glanced behind him, out the open back door of the store, and saw the reflection of dancing, leaping flames reddening the night sky. He slipped closer to the cracked open door that would lead into the store. He peeked through the crack. Smoke could see Ed trussed up like a hog on the floor of the store. The man's face appeared to be badly swollen. There was blood and puke on his shirt front. Lifting his eyes, searching, he saw Peg. The woman had been badly used and appeared to be just conscious enough to sob. A TF gunhawk, his pants down around his boots, his back to Smoke, was having his way with the woman. Several TF riders were sprawled on the floor and on the counters. They seemed to be dead drunk and out of it. Two TF gun slicks were leaning against the counter, drinking whiskey straight out of the bottle, an amused look on their faces as they watched the rape of Peg Jackson. Those men seemed to be the only ones still conscious enough to give Smoke any cause for worry, and they conveniently chose that moment to walk out onto the boardwalk in front of the general store. Smoke slipped into the large area of the store. Looking down, he saw that Ed was awake and staring at him through wide and very frightened eyes. Smoke nodded his head at the man and put a finger to his lips, urging Ed to keep silent. Ed nodded his head. Picking up an axe handle, Smoke slipped up behind the rapist, busy at his ugly work. Smoke pulled the lifeless body off Peg Jackson. The man's head was split wide open, his brains exposed.
Peg, here's a blanket. Cover yourself.
Peg looked at the blanket through dull and uncomprehending eyes. Glancing toward the open front door, Smoke couldn't see the two TF gunnies who had stepped outside. So walking swiftly to the counter, he picked up one half-empty bottle of whiskey and returned to Peg.
Peg, come on now, drink this.
Peg's eyes cleared a bit. She pulled a blanket over her nakedness and slowly nodded her head in understanding.
All right, Peg. I want you to get to the back of the store and wait there for us.
Peg rose and walked slowly, painfully, toward the rear of the store. Smoke didn't bother cutting Ed's bonds. He just picked the man up and slung him over his shoulder. He walked swiftly out of the show and business area of the store, joining Peg on the loading dock. Smoke eased Ed to the dock and pulled out his knife.
Hold still, Ed.
Now free, Ed rubbed his raw wrists and ankles.
Now, hitch up your team. Do it very quietly and very quickly. Take the old road that circles the town and head for Big Rock, a couple of miles out of town. Pull up and wait for Spaulding and Arden there.
Absolutely not. What about my store?
Your store? Get your goddamn ass moving, Ed, or I'll turn you back over to those TF riders. How do you want it?
Ed moved quickly to the barn, Peg walking slowly behind him, the blanket clutched tightly around her. Smoke walked back inside just as the two TF gunslicks walked in through the front door.
Hey!
Animals, that's all you were.
His .44 is holstered. Smoke walked to Ed Jackson's gun rack and took a sawed-off shotgun, breaking it down and loading it with buckshot, then stuffing his pockets full of shells. He took two new .44 pistols from the arms showcase, checked the action, loaded them full, tucked them behind his gun belt. Shotgun in hand, Smoke stepped out onto the boardwalk and prepared to lessen the odds, while passed-out gun slicks in the store slept on, probably saving their lives, at least for the time being. A TF gunslick made the mistake of riding up just at that moment. Smoke lifted the greener. He looked around him, his eyes picking up the black-dressed figure of Lewis Longmont, standing on the boardwalk across the street. Lewis had a Colt in each hand, the hammer's back.
Where's Johnny?
Right up there!
Smoke looked through the smoky night air and spotted Johnny North about a half a block away.
I got the pilgrims on the way. Looks like Bonnie's gonna make it if he can stand the trip.
Then let's do some damage, and then get the hell out of here.
Two gun hawks came running up the street on Lewis's side. The gambler dropped them both, his guns belching gray smoke and fire. Smoke heard a noise to his left and spun around, dropping to one knee. Smoke felt the lead as it passed over his head. He wouldn't make the same mistake twice.
Let's go!
Smoke began falling back. He stepped into Ed's store just as one of the drunken TF riders reared up, a pistol in his hands. Smoke shot him in the chest with his sawed off, and the gunny died amid the corsets and the bloomers. Running out the back, Smoke got his horse and swung into the saddle. Smoke galloped straight up the last few blocks of the boomtown, now going bust, ready to run past the now raging house afire. Johnny North was right behind him, and Lewis Longmont just behind Johnny. Bull and Crooked John were waiting at the end of town, rifles in their hands, and their aim was deadly. Five gunfighters took a fearful toll on Tilden Franklin's gun hands over the last few blocks. Most of the gunnies were busy with a bucket line, trying to keep the raging fires contained at one end of the town. Smoke, Johnny, and Lewis rode right through the bucket brigade, guns blazing. Lewis, Johnny, and Smoke sent the gun hands turned firemen running and diving and sprawling for their lives. Meanwhile, Tilden Franklin stood in the best suite of the hotel and watched it all, his hate-filled eyes as hot as the flames that threatened to consume the town. He turned to the small, unconscious woman who had been the sole property of Big Mama and wrapped his powerful hands around her neck.
This is your fault, Smoke Jensen!
He picked up the naked, ravaged woman with the now broken neck and threw her body out the second floor window. The young woman lay dead on the street. Tilden Franklin aimed his guns at the battered body and riddled it.
I'll kill you, Jensen! I'm gonna burn your goddamn town to the ground, and I'm gonna have your woman right in front of your eyes!
Outside of the TF ranch house, the old gunfighters lay on the ridges that surrounded the huge home and made life miserable for those TF gunhawks who had survived the initial attack. Singer saw out the window that the moon was full and golden in the starry night sky, the illumination highlighting the bodies of those gunnies who now lay sprawled in death on the ground surrounding the bunkhouse and the main ranch house. Those trapped in the bunkhouse and in the main house were not at all happy about their situation. Several had thought the night would cover them as they tried to escape. Those with that thought now lay dead.
What are we going to do, Singer?
Hold out till the boss gets back. There ain't that many of them up there on the ridges.
Yeah, but I got me a peek at who they is. That's them old gunfighters. And I seen the Apache Kid among them. Toot Tuner and Red Shingleton, too. Those boys don't take no prisoners. Never have. They don't expect no quarter, and they don't give none.
Well, shut up!
I ain't going out there. No way!
As the TF gun hands weighed their options, none of them could hear the moccasin feet of the Apache Kid as he slipped through the kitchen and into the large dining area. Sutler Cordova was right behind him. There had been a guard at the back door. He now lay on the porch, his throat cut, his blood staining the ground. Both men had their hands full of pistols, the hammers jacked back.
I think something is wrong.
What?
I don't know. There ain't a damn shot fired in more than 15, 20 minutes.
Maybe they pulled out.
Oh, shit.
Apache and Sutler were grateful to Smoke Jensen for giving them this opportunity to go out as gunfighters should. They'd all outlived their time, and they all knew it. They had no one to live for, and no one to grieve for them when they died. They were a part of the West's rapidly vanishing past, so they would go out as they had lived. They stepped into the room.
Evening, boys.
Oh, God, it's the... Ah!
Kill them!
The room filled with gray smoke. Sutler Cordova died with his back to a wall, his hands full of guns. The old man had taken a dreadful toll while he had lived this night. The Apache's kid's guns went empty just as Singer drew a bead.
Oh! I got him! I got the Apache kid!
You got nothing.
The old gunfighter buried his knife into Singer's chest and rode him down to the floor.
You got nothing.
When the other aging gunfighters walked slowly down to the big house, they found no life there.
We'll bury our men in the morning. I'll come back into town and bring the minister with me.
What do y'all do with the dead TF gunnies?
They're hardly deserving of the honor. They can rot where they lie.
Apache and Sutter both told me they was going out this run. Apache had a bad ticker and Sutter was having a hard time passing his water. It's good they went out this way. I'm right happy for them.
You're happy your friends died?
Well, sure. That's the way they wanted it.
I fear I may never understand the Western way of doing things.
Hello, Mrs. Spaulding. How's Peg Jackson?
Physically, not hurt too badly, but just like Velvet, she's not good in the head. She said they did terrible things to her. My husband's been talking with her.
How's Monty?
He's in rough shape, but Colton says he thinks he's going to pull through.
How about Ed?
Like you give a damn.
Hey, his prices were fair.
Oh, Ed's all right. Though I did hear him complain about losing his store.
Yeah, that sounds like him.
Charlie Starr fished a tightly rolled cigarette from his pocket.
You don't belong here, Mona. This country's still got some rough and woolly years ahead of it. It's gonna take some tough-minded men and women to see it through.
So what's the plan, Smoke? I know you've got one. You've been thinking hard for about an hour now.
I'm gonna get a few hours sleep and then get the preacher. After the services, I'm riding into Fontana and get this matter settled, one way or the other. Anybody who wants to come along is welcome to ride.
They left the graveyard at 9 o'clock the next morning. They'd said their goodbyes to the Apache Kid and Sutler Cordova. And then those that had family to worry about them said their goodbyes to womenfolk and kids. And then they swung into the saddle. They left behind them some heavily armed hands who worked for Beaconfield and Mike Garrett, but who were hands, not gun hands. And they also left a half a dozen teenagers who were excellent shots with a rifle. In addition, Hunt, Colton, and Haywood were armed with rifles and shotguns. All the Western women could shoot rifles and shotguns just as well, and sometimes better than the men did. Mike, the big bouncer, was there, as well as Wilbur Mason, Dad Weaver, and Billy. The general store had been turned into a fort in case of attack. 28 men rode toward the town of Fontana. They had guns in leather, guns tucked behind gun belts, guns stashed in their saddlebags, and rifles and shotguns in saddle boots. They looked down on the town of Fontana and stared at the long line of wagons that were pulling out. Smoke looked at Ralph Morrow.
Go find out about that, will you, Ralph?
Ralph Morrow rode down to the lead wagon, talked for a moment, then rode back to where Smoke sat his horse with the others.
Big Mama's dead. She stormed into a saloon last night after she learned that Tilden Franklin had raped and killed her wife. Tilden ordered her hanged. The man I talked to said it took a long time for her to die. One of Big Mama's girls tried to run away last night. Tilden's gunslicks caught her and used her. Then they dragged her and set her on fire. Tilden killed Beaker at the store. Then some of his men violated his wife, but she made too much noise for their taste, so they shot her halfway through. The people in those wagons, those are the last of the decent men and women of Fontana. Those that are left are the worst of the worst, those staying behind to loot the town or make a name for themselves. They know we're coming.
Not surprised. Judge Proctor ever get back from out of town?
I didn't think to ask, Smoke. Sorry.
Not a problem. Figured they'd mention it if he has. All right. If we go in there, we're gonna have to take this place building by building. They're no doubt dug in after the hurting we put on them last night. The cost, for us, will be too high.
What choice do we have?
We could wait for the army.
No!
Well, Mr. Morrow, the preacher wants to take the law into his own hands. Now, what would your church have to say about that?
Maybe I wasn't cut out to be a minister, Smoke. I've seen a lot of bad in my days, and there's only so much cheek-turning a man can do. It is my belief that people like Tilden Franklin should not be allowed to live. Back east, and I know that's where I'm from, lawyers are already using the insanity plea to get killers off scot-free. And it's gonna get worse. Let's not start a precedent out here.
A what?
We are not letting Tilden Franklin go free.
Oh, I agree with that.
There's another way.
And that is?
I challenge Tilden Franklin. Best man with a gun wins.
No. Tilden Franklin is a man totally without honor. Basically, he's a coward, a back shooter. He'd set you up, Smoke.
We could burn the bastards out.
How many days since we've had rain, Luke? Too long. That's why Tilden ordered his men to put out the fire last night instead of concentrating on us. We couldn't risk a grass fire. Feel this hot wind? It would spread faster than anyone could contain it.
Besides, old tight-fisted Ed Jackson will probably sue us for destroying all his goods.
Well, boys, that don't leave us with too goddamn many options now, do we?
The men swung their horses toward Fontana, lying hot under the sun and wind. Hard Rock, Moody, and Sunset were sent around to the far end of the town, stationed there with rifles to pick off any TF gun hand who might try to slip out, either to run off or try and angle around behind Smoke and his party for a box-in.
Yeah!
The others split up into groups of twos and threes and rode hunched over, low in the saddle, to present a smaller target for the riflemen they had spotted lying in wait on the rooftops in Fontana. They rode in a zigzagging fashion, making themselves and their horses even harder to hit. Even with that precaution, two men were hit before they reached the town limits.
Keep moving!
The old gunfighter Lynch was hit just as he reached the town.
Lynch!
Leo Wood, seeing his longtime buddy die, threw all caution to the wind. He dashed into what had once been a dress shop and pulled out both Remington Frontier 44s. Leo cleared the dress shop of all the TF riders before a single shot from a Peacemaker 45 across the street ended his long and violent life. Pearly settled down by the corner of the building and with his Winchester 44-40 began picking his shots. Ranges up to 200 yards, 44-40 could punch right through the walls of the deserted building to Fontana. Pearly killed half a dozen TF gunhawks without even seeing his targets. Lewis Longmont met several TF gun hands in an alley. The gambler never stopped walking as his Colt spat and sang a death song. Reloading, he stepped over the sprawled, bloody bodies and walked on up the alley. The gambler's left arm suddenly grew numb. Hooking the thumb of his left hand behind his gun belt, he dropped to one knee and found the rifleman responsible on the roof of the bank building. Lewis then removed a white linen handkerchief from an inside breast pocket of his tailored jacket. He plugged the hole in his shoulder and continued on his hunt. The Reverend Ralph Morris stepped into what had been the saloon of Big Mama and the bidden place of her soiled doves and began working the lever on his Henry 44. The boxer turned preacher turned farmer turned gunfighter hoped God would forgive him, and he blasted the hell out of any TF gun hand he could find. The rifle empty now, Ralph jerked out a pair of 45s. A lousy pistol shot, and that is being kind. Ralph succeeded in filling the beery air with a lot of hot lead. He didn't hit a damn thing with the pistol, but he did manage to scare the living shit out of those gun hands left standing after his good shooting with the rifle. They ran out the front of the saloon and directly into the guns of Pistol LaRue and Dan Greentree.
Round two.
Ralph picked up his rifle and reloaded.
All right, who's next?
Ralph hit the boardwalk. His hat fluttered to the ground, a fresh hole punched through it. Ralph sighted the TF gunman on the roof. Ralph took a moment to thank God for the near miss. Charlie Stard cleared a small saloon of half a dozen hired guns and now sat at a table having a bottle of sweetened soda water. He would have much preferred a glass of beer, but hell, the sweet water beat nothing.
Oh, God damn it!
Seeing a flash of movement across the street, Charlie put down the bottle and picked up a cocked 45 from the table. He sighted the TF gun hand in and pulled the trigger.
Now leave me alone, let me finish my soda water!
The Silver Dollar Kid came face to face with Silver Jim. The old gunfighter grinned at the punk. Both men had their guns in leather.
Well, well, looks like this is my lucky day. You ready to get yourself killed?
Mama! Mama!
Silver Jim just stepped around the punk and continued his prowling. A few of Tilden's hired guns, less hardy than they thought, tried to slip out the rear of the town. Moody, Hard Rock, and Sunset were waiting for him. Smoke met Luis Chamba behind the stable. The Mexican gunfighter grinned at him.
Now, Smoke, we see just how good you really are.
I already know how good I am.
Smoke's sawed-off shotgun nearly blew the gunfighter in two.
And I don't give a damn how good you were.
Smoke reloaded the 10-gauge sawed-off and stepped into the stable. Smoke turned to the sound. He watched as a man, or what was left of a man, hurled out of the loft door to come splatting onto the shit-littered ground.
Smoke!
Valentine.
You think you got time to reload that shotgun of yours, or are you gonna play fair this time?
I reckon I don't have a choice.
Smoke dropped the shotgun. Both their hands hovered over the butts of their guns.
I'm better than you. You know I am.
News to me.
I didn't even clear leather.
You sure didn't.
Well, shit.
Smoke cocked his head. Something was very wrong. Then it came to him. No gunfire. Cautiously, Smoke stepped to the stable door and looked out. Gun smoke lay over the town like a shroud. The dusty streets were littered with bodies, not all of them TF gun hands. Smoke was conscious of his friends looking at him, standing silently. Lewis pointed with the muzzle of his pistol. Smoke looked far up the street. He could make out the shape of Tilden Franklin. Smoke stepped out onto the street and faced the man. Tilden began walking toward him.
It's over, Tilden.
Not yet. I kill you. Then it's over.
Make your play.
Smoke ignored the stinging pain in his left side and walked toward Tilden, the man who would be king, now bleeding out from a hole in his chest.
You had everything a man could ask for, Tilden. Why weren't you satisfied?
Tilden looked at Smoke, and still the hate was in his eyes. And then his eyes glazed over. Smoke whirled around. Luke Nations lay crumpled on the boardwalk, a large hole in the center of his back. Sundance stepped out of a building, a pistol in his hand. He looked up and grinned.
Yee-hoo! I did it! Me, Sundance, I killed Luke Nations!
You goddamn back-shooting punk!
No, Charlie, don't!
Smoke walked over to Lester, one hand holding his bleeding side.
You!
Yeah?
Smoke backhanded him. Sundance landed on his butt in the street. His mouth was busted, blood leaking from one corner. He looked up at Smoke, raw fear in his wide eyes.
You're gonna kill me, ain't you?
What's your name, punk?
Sundance.
Well, Sundance, you want to live, do you?
Yeah.
And you want to be known as a top gun hand, right, Sundance?
Yeah.
Smoke kicked the kid in the face.
My mouth!
What's your last name, shithead?
Morgan.
All right. Les Sundance Morgan. I'll let you live. And Les, I'm going to spread your name all over the West. Les Sundance Morgan. The man who killed the famed gunfighter Luke Nations. Les Sundance Morgan, the man with one ear.
But I got two ears.
You got one ear now, Sundance. Got some whiskey, Johnny?
Always carry a flask with me.
Fix Sundance's ear.
Anything for a fellow gunslinger.
Johnny North poured the whiskey right onto the raw open wound.
Shoot. He passed out.
Well, he's no good unconscious.
No, I'll wrap him up. I've seen some pretty bad stuff in my boxing days.
Ralph bandaged the ugly wound and took care to make sure the bleeding had stopped.
Thanks, Ralph. Hey, Sundance, wake up!
Why are you doing this to me?
So everybody, no matter where you go, can know who you are, punk. The man who killed Luke Nations. Now listen to me, you son of a bitch. You want to know how it feels to be Top Gun? Well, just look around you. Ask anybody.
Lester's eyes found Charlie Starr.
You're Charlie Starr. You're more famous than Luke Nations. But I'm going to be famous too, ain't I?
Charlie rolled a cigarette and stuck it between Lester's lips.
Let me light that for you, gunslinger. You want to know how it is? Well, it's a real grand time. You can't sit with your back to no empty space. Always to a wall. Lots of back shooters out there. You don't never make your fire, cook, and then sleep in the same spot. You always move before you bed down, because somebody's always looking to gun you down for a reputation. You ain't never gonna marry, because if you do, it won't last. You got to stay on the move all the time. Because you're the man who killed Luke Nations. And there's going to be 1,000 punks just like you looking for you. You'll drift, boy. You'll drift all the time. And you might near always ride alone, unless you can find a partner that you know you can trust not to shoot you when you're in your blankets. And a lot of towns won't want you. The marshal and the townspeople will meet you with rifles and shotguns and point you the way out, because they don't want no gunfighter in their town. And after a while, if you live, you'll do damn near anything so people won't know who you are. But they always seem to find out. Then you change your name again and again, just looking for a little peace and quiet. But you ain't never gonna find it. You might get good enough to live for a long time. I hope you do. I hope you ride 10,000 lonely miles, you back-shooting bastard. 10,000 miles looking over your back. 10,000 towns that you'll ride in and out of in the dead of night, eating your meals just at closing time. If you can find the eating place that'll serve you, 10,000 hours that you'll wish you could somehow change your life. But you can't. You can't change because they won't let you. Because you're the man who killed Luke Nations. You got your rep, punk. You wanted it so damn bad, you got her. Ain't that right, Johnny?
I had me a good woman one time. We married, and I hung up my guns, sonny boy. Some goddamn bounty hunters shot in my cabin one night, killed my wife. I never broke no law until then. But I tracked them so-called lawmen down and hung them one by one. I was on the Hoot Owl Trail for years after that. I had both the law and the reputation hunters after me. Sounds like a real fine life, don't it, punk? I hope you enjoy it.
Now, Lester Sundance Morgan, get your horse and ride before one of us here takes a notion to brace the man who killed Luke Nations.
It ain't like that. It ain't none at all like what you said it was. I love women throwing themselves at me. I love money, and I love everything I ever wanted. I'll show you! You're gonna hear all about me!
Sad, silly son of a bitch.
I couldn't have said it no better myself, Preacher.
The bodies of the gunfighters and Tilden Franklin were dragged to a lone building just at the edge of what was left of the boomtown named Fontana. The building was doused with kerosene and then torched.
Raining.
About time we got some rain around here.
Lots of folks coming, Smoke.
Charlie Starr pointed to the road leading to the High Lonesome. It was Sally and Belle and Bountiful, and nearly all those the men had left behind.
Oh, Smoke! Oh!
Watch the left side, Sally.
Oh, sorry.
Nah, I'm sorry. I just got blood all over your blouse.
Oh, what a story this will make. It'll run in the Times for sure.
Yeah. You be sure and write it, Haywood. And be sure you spell one name right.
Haywood whipped out a writing tablet and a stubby pencil.
You bet. Who's that?
Lester Sundance Morgan.
Lester Sundance Morgan.
And write this down, too. He's a young punk. Brown hair. Not too tall. And he ain't got but one ear. That'll make him easy to spot.
Got it. What did this Lester Sundance Morgan do?
He's the fearless gunfighter who killed Luke Nations.
Ed Jackson and his wife went back east, anywhere east of the Mississippi River. They did not say goodbye to anybody, just loaded their wagon and pulled out early one morning. Lewis Longmont, Mike, and Andre left the town of Big Rock. Lewis thought he'd retire for a time. But Smoke knew he wouldn't. Not for long, anyway. The raw and woolly West had not seen the last of Lewis Longmont. Not by a long shot. Monty Carson recovered from his wounds and became the sheriff of Big Rock, Colorado. He married himself a grass widow and settled down. The aging gunfighters pulled out of the area, riding out in small groups of twos and threes, or alone. Alone as they had lived. Charlie Starr rode out of Big Rock and into the annals of Western history. Smoke would see the famed gunslinger again and, well, but that's another story. The Fontana Sunburst became the Big Rock Guardian, and it would remain so until the town changed its name just before the turn of the century. Colton Spaulding remained the town's doctor until his death in the 1920s. Sally and Mona and Bountiful and Dana and Willa would live to see the vote, as it was called. But there again, well, that's another story. Judge Proctor returned and was named district judge. He lived in the area until his death in 1896. Word drifted back that Lester Sundance Morgan had been braced by a couple of young dudeded up dandies looking for a reputation down in New Mexico territory. Sundance had managed to drop them both and was now riding low, keeping out of sight. The report that Smoke received last said that Lester was a very bitter young man. The gold vein ran dry and all the miners left as peace finally settled over the High Lonesome once again. The gold still lies in the ground on Smoke and Sally's sugar loaf. They never touched it. The last store in Fontana closed its doors in 1880. The lonely winds hummed and sang their quiet western songs throughout the empty buildings and ragged bits of tent canvas for many years. The songs sang of love and hate and violence and bloody gunfights until the last building collapsed in the 1940s. Now, nothing is left. Danner and Signal Hill died out near the turn of the century. But the town that was once called Big Rock, well, Big Rock remains. And the descendants of Smoke and Sally Jensen, Johnny and Bell North, Pearly, and all the others still live there, finally in peace. But peace was a long time coming to that part of Colorado, for not all the gunslicks were killed that bloody day in Fontana. Those few that managed to escape swore they'd come back and have their revenge. And they would try. It would be many more years before Smoke Jensen could hang up his guns for good. Many years before Smoke and Sally Jensen's sons and daughters could live in peace. For Smoke Jensen was the West's most famous gunfighter. And for years to come, there would be those fools who sought a reputation for themselves. But before all that, on a bright, sunny, warm, late summer morning, Velvet Colby stirred in her bed.
Mama! Mama!
Velvet? Baby? Is that you?
Belle and her new husband ran to Velvet's bedroom. Johnny North, one of the West's most feared gunfighters, knelt and took the girl's hands in his hard and calloused ones.
Yes, Velvet? What is it?
Can I go outside? Looks like such a beautiful day.
Oh, yes, 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 baby.
That day, a gentle, peaceful breeze stirred the branches and the flowers and the tall, lush grass of the High Lonesome along the trail of the last mountain man. Smoke Jensen, The Mountain Man 3, Trail of the Mountain Man, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 1987, William W. Johnstone. Production copyright 2009, The Cutting Corporation, all rights reserved. Performed by Mort Shelby, James Lewis, Richard Rowan, Terrence Aselford, David Coyne, Elizabeth Jernigan, Tim Carlin, Danny Gavigan, Tim Getman, Eric Messner, Andy Clements, Christopher Graybill, Joe Brack, Jonathan Watkins, Tony Nam, Karen Carbone, Michael Glenn, Sonny Lasky, Stephen Carpenter, Tom Simpson, Ken Jackson, Lily Beacon, Sherry Simpson, Nanette Savard, Johann Detweiler, and Dylan Lynch. Additional Boot Hill Boys by The Dead Giveaways. Directed by Bob Supan. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing by Brian Patton. Graphic audio sound design by Brian Patton and Johann Detweiler. Original music by Brian Patton and Johann Detweiler. Book adapted for graphic audio by Dan Smith. If you enjoyed Trail of the Mountain Man, read the Pinnacle Edition. Visit www.kensingtonbooks.com. And be sure to look for William W. Johnstone's The First Mountain Man, Blood Bond, The Last Gunfighter, and Eagle series, all available from Graphic Audio at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our action-packed titles as well as free downloads and podcasts. Now keep listening for exciting previews of other Graphic Audio titles. We appreciate it.
The following previews are of Graphic Audio Productions, rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
Available now from Graphic Audio.
I'm Kyle Rayner, commonly known as Green Lantern, and there's a story that goes with that. What am I supposed to do?
Wear the ring.
For how long?
Until you die, or something worse happens to you.
Shooting at me.
I'm here as a representative of the Justice League.
You've got like a club.
Something like that.
You screwed up badly tonight.
You remember the signaling device we gave you?
Where'd you find it?
On the floor.
I intend to know if you're responsible for the disappearance of the satellite.
Why do you think I might be?
You could be smarter than you seem.
Well, I'm not.
I was called Ganthet.
You're a half a million years old?
If my brothers succeed, there will never have been life on Earth.
It's up to us to prevent the end of the universe?
Graphic Audio presents DC Comics Justice League of America, Green Lantern, Heroes Quest.
If we do not do it, it will not be done.
Copyright 2009, DC Comics, all rights reserved. Justice League of America, Green Lantern, and all related characters and elements are trademarks of DC Comics.
Available now. Graphic Audio.
Preacher, I'm surprised to see you again so soon. Where's your pack horse?
Lost the pack horse. You hear a rumbling noise yesterday morning a while after I left?
Yes, I think I did. What happened?
Avalanche.
In the pass? My God, are you all right?
Well, me and dog and horse managed to stay out of its way. Pack horse wasn't so lucky. Lost him and all my supplies.
That's terrible. No wonder you came back. You've had so much bad luck, it almost seems like someone is out to get you, Preacher.
They are.
What do you mean?
Three men started that avalanche on purpose. They were trying to kill me, just like the two the day before.
Did you know any of them?
Nope. Also like the day before. Varmints were strangers to me.
Listen to me, everyone. Tomorrow we're going to resume the search for Preacher. But we're not going to split our forces again. We'll all search together until we find him and dispose of him.
But, boss, we're only talking about one man.
No. We're talking about Preacher.
I'm not sure why Lord Aspermont is so interested in this territory.
You know how important the fur trade is. But more than that, these mountains have some of the most abundant natural resources on Earth. Can you imagine how much lumber could be cut from those trees? Not to mention the minerals that may be here. Besides, do you want those damned Americans to have it? They've already taken so much from us.
Of course, I'll do whatever is necessary to thwart their expansion. If they're allowed to settle this vast territory, their grip on the continent will never be shaken loose. We have to stop them before they control everything from the Atlantic to the Pacific.
We will. The rifles are all right.
You keep asking me that. The guns are fine. No one will find them, concealed as they are in those false bottoms of the wagons. As soon as the man who's supposed to put us in contact with the Indians arrives, we'll get in touch with the savages and strike a bargain with them, just as Lord Aspermont planned. It won't be long until this whole part of the country is overrun with well-armed redskins who want nothing more than to drive the Americans from their land.
The King's land! Once the Americans have abandoned it, then we'll deal with those savages properly. It's only a matter of time, Clyde. Only a matter of time until the streams are running red with American blood.
Injun! Injun! Everybody into the stockade!
At last. You'll never ruin my plans again, you bastard.
I won't need to. I reckon you'll find a way to do that yourself, Fairfax.
Silence! What's wrong with you, woman? You were ready to cut his throat, but you don't like it when somebody else hurts him?
I was trying to save our lives. You're just being vicious.
Believe me, he's got it coming.
Don't miss one action-packed minute of the first Mountain Man 15, Preacher's Pursuit. Available now from Graphic Audio.
If you can't find that hot Graphic Audio title you're looking for, just head to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD or MP3 disc format. Or, the fastest and cheapest way, download that puppy and play it on any of the many devices that'll play Windows Media. And if you're on the road or just a total computer feeb, snatch up the phone and call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net.